I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast, where you will be inspired and empowered to connect more deeply with your authentic self as we explore topics of personal development, leadership, and spirituality. Your journey to your most authentic self starts right now. Please be advised that this episode deals with many difficult life events that may be a trigger to some, including references to the Nova Scotia mass shooting. Karen Dean has learned to be resilient despite having suffered many challenging events in her life. She is passionate about teaching women to become resilient, and she shares her insight with us today, including how does one know they are resilient and what does it mean to be healed? When her friend Gina was gunned down in the Nova Scotia massacre, Karen jumped into action. Karen's philosophy is helping is healing. So she quickly published a book of 22 women's stories and created clothing to fund the families of the Nova Scotia shooting. She was able to donate $96,000. You will learn today what the title of her book expresses. We are unbreakable. Karen Dean, welcome to Soul Sister Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure to be in conversation with anyone who is willing to share their lessons of life or their authentic journey. And I had been following you for a while on Instagram, and I can't even think about how we got connected. It might have been the Liz Gilbert conference or something like that. But I've been watching your posts and getting a feeling that there was more to your story than meets the eye. And in particular, I watched as you launched and published your book called Unbreakable to help the victims of the Nova Scotia mass shooting. And you're going to talk today about resilience, that you help women with resilience. And suffice it to say, from our pre-chat, you and your family have been through a lot, suffered various kinds of abuse, and most recently, your son being diagnosed with cancer. And of course, you lost a friend in the Nova Scotia shooting tragedy. And these are not small events. I mean, any of us going through things that knock us down is difficult to get back up. But after, you know, we were chatting, I said to you, I felt like I had to exhale. And many people can relate to, you know, being hit. But these are big things. So I'm just curious about when you kept getting hit with situation after situation, you thought what?
The biggest thing that I thought was, I need to get myself and my kids through this successfully. I'm not really a why me person. I'm not a the universe hates me person. Some days I am, but you know, for short periods of the time, we do have those thoughts. But mostly I thought, you know, I have big dreams and I have big goals and I can't let these things stop me. If anything, I have to learn the lesson from these and use it to help grow and use it to help become a better person. And that's really what I've done or tried to do through all of this is learn the lessons and use them to help myself, help my children, and help others in the bigger community.
And you said to move through this successfully do you define the success by getting the lessons, or how would you define moving through something successfully?
Definitely by learning the lessons, but also, you know, for something that's a visible success for me, it's that my children grow up to be good humans, is how I always say it. You know, that they aren't making bad choices, that they are, you know, getting good careers and having good lives, and they're happy and they're kind. Those are the things that define success for me, because, you know, really it's my whole life has been about my kids since I became a parent. And I know a lot of parents feel that way. And I wanted to make sure that I was a good role model for them, and that they knew they had someone they could look up to and someone they could trust and someone who could set a good example for them. And that's always what drove me to do better.
And it's driving you to help other, is it other women or other people in particular, just people in general, about how to be more resilient when you get hit with tons of life events?
My focus is women. The messages that I give apply to everyone, But I find that a lot of women relate to my stories because a lot of women have experienced things similar to what I have experienced. Traditionally, generally speaking, a lot of the women end up being the single parents who have the kids the majority of the time. And all of those things, you know, are me. So people, you know, in similar situations to me tend to relate to my stories better. So like I said, what I talk about is for everyone. But as far as people who, you know, follow me on social media, most of them are women. And most of the events that I speak at are female focused, but.
But universal messages of resilience.
For sure. I think we all need them. And, you know, really, it's funny that so many men, in my experience, are trying to be the tough guys because that's what's programmed into them. But, you know, there's a lot of underlying things that maybe they really do need to look at these messages as much as the women do and realize that they don't have to be the tough guy who doesn't show the feelings all the times. Because one of the biggest things about getting through hard situations and dealing with them successfully is feeling the feelings, I like to say, and, you know, acknowledging the feelings, acknowledging you're scared, hurt, upset, whatever it may be, and working through it as opposed to pushing it down and pretending it's not there.
And what have you come to a definition of resilience that you tend to adhere to? Like, my definition of resilience, how do you define it, and what have you come to know about it?
I like to say it's your ability to bounce back. So the more resilient you are, the easier it is to bounce back from the hard situations. We all have some level of resilience. It's just a matter of, it's like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. And so the more you acknowledge, you know, the things that are hard, the things that are trying to bring you down, and then bring yourself through them, it gets easier. It really does. And, you know, my hard things started 20 years ago, when my son was very ill, and I thought that was the hardest thing I'd ever have to go through. And then I've been through a lot harder things since then, but they didn't seem harder because I've just developed that resilience, and I've developed the skill set and the mindset to be able to get through that easier than that very first really hard thing that hit me.
Yeah. And that, and none of us are ever prepared for the curveballs. I mean, we're all living through one right now, of course, with the pandemic. And just when we thought that was enough, then there's been things that happened within that, you know, people have lost loved ones or lost jobs or, you know, just absolutely fatigued from lockdowns or whatever it is, or, you know, being challenged by what people believe about vaccinations. And there's just, you know, there's one big overarching one and then a whole bunch in there. So I think so many people can relate just in their own personal lives, let alone the number of big life events that people like yourself have also lived through, like just heavy, heavy stuff. And when you talk about resilience with people, is it healing for you to continue to tell your stories or to teach other people? Does it help you?
It definitely does. I like to say that for me, helping is healing, and it always has been. You know, if I can help other people, it helps me, because there's a real sense of gratification from being able to know that what I'm sharing is helping somebody else through their hard times. And I like to say that, you know, you can't speak from an open wound. You can only speak from a scar. So until you're healed, it's really hard to tell the stories. And I've gotten to a place where I feel like I am healed, and it's not hard to tell my stories. I don't get upset about them anymore. It doesn't make me want to cry to tell my story. So I think that's the key to being able to help others, is living your own truth and healing from those open wounds.
And I'm curious about the healing, because this is something I have asked someone else on the podcast. You're like, how do you know when you're healed? Because I often hear a lot of people use this. It's always a continual thing, like I'm healing or I'm in the process of healing. And you say it's easier to speak from your scar than your open wound. So how do you know that you're healed? Or what are your signs that you are healed or feeling?
My signs for myself are when, like I said, when I can talk about it without feeling the need to cry anymore, when I can talk about it without it evoking really deep emotional responses in myself, then I know that I've healed from that. And there are some things that have happened in my life that I still, I'm not comfortable talking about. And, you know, because there's still some healing left to do. So it's just, you know, when it's easier to talk about, you know that the wound is healing and you're getting to the scar point. And, you know, it's funny, I've seen a post that goes around on social media about, you know, how crazy your life has been when you start telling your story to other people and everyone gets silent and stares at you. And they're like, holy crap. So I've had that experience with people when, you know, I just tell my story like, you know, like we talk about going for a walk in the park because it's easy for me now, but other people are like, wow. So
it's uncomfortable probably too.
Yeah. And when I do speaking on stage
for them, I mean,
I talk about that at the beginning that, you know, as I tell my stories, you may get uncomfortable, but I want you to sit with the discomfort and acknowledge it because that's all part of getting through it.
Yeah, that's so true. And so you are founder of Resilience Reboot. So is that a program or what is that?
It is a program that I am launching soon. It has had several pre-launches because I was about to launch it when COVID started. And to be honest, as resilient as I am, when COVID started, I kind of crashed. It was just so many new things for me. And my kids were home with me all the time. And, you know, I work from home. So trying to find the privacy to do a program where I was talking to other people, you know, I just couldn't wrap my head around that at that time. And then, you know, a month passed and then the shooting happened here in Nova Scotia. And that made me pivot my other company, which is a clothing company, to do a fundraiser for the families of the victims. And that kept me really busy for months. And then my son was diagnosed with cancer. And then that kept me busy for almost a year. So I'm finally ready to relaunch the Resilience Reboot early in the new year. And it is a 6-week program where I will be live with the people who choose to participate in it. We're going to talk about resilience. We're going to talk about how to boost your resilience, build that muscle, celebrate ourselves. And there's a whole lot of things that go into it. And I'm really excited about it.
And it's interesting that you're making the point of, you know, even though you've learned to be resilient, that just because we become resilient, it's like a muscle. We have to keep practicing. It doesn't mean that we're not going to experience something else that isn't going to knock us down. But you say it is that ability to bounce back, that you know what to do or how to move through it a little bit. Maybe, I don't know if quickly is the word, but move through it.
Quickly is part of it. I mean, you do get through it faster the more you work that muscle, but it's more about getting through it more consciously and acknowledging that you do have something you need to get through and not ignoring it. And, you know, it's mental health is such, it's in the spotlight so much these days because there's so many people who are suffering. And that's something I've learned is I need to look after my own mental health first. I have children who are dependent on me. And whatever I need to do to make sure I am mentally healthy, I have to do for them and for myself. But I can't let myself get to a point where I can't look after my kids. And so I've learned to stop and take a breath. And, you know, financially, that's been kind of hard the last year and a half with my son with cancer and me not being able to work. And I'm the only person to support these kids. But it was utmost importance to me to be healthy for them. And that's why I had to slow down and just kind of reevaluate and look at what my priorities were and what I was going to do and how I was going to look after them. And, you know, they were scared when COVID started. It was a whole new thing. And I mean, my son was 19 and my daughter was 12, and they didn't understand. And, you know, the media is like, oh, it's going to be a rough couple of weeks.
And I like the word that you're using, to move through something a lot more consciously. I like that, as being awake to the feelings, being awake to what's happening.
Yes, and that's the really key to getting through it is, like I said, it's feeling the feelings.
It's really easy to go unconscious and numb out, right? Or check out.
Yes. And that's our norm. And that's, you know, what a lot of us are programmed to do. And the first step when I give my tools for resilience is to breathe. Because so many of us, when something hard happens, we kind of stop breathing, whether it's, you know, something quick where we hold our breath, or something huge like COVID, where we just, I just call it, you know, you go into your shell and you're like a little turtle, because, you know, that's what's easy. But to be conscious about it, you know, to actually breathe through it. And when some hard things have happened in my life, when I've gotten hard news from, for instance, when my son told me that the doctors just told him he had cancer, I consciously just took some really deep breaths. And that's a quick fix when you're in something really hard, is to just breathe.
Yeah, that's a good one. And it's a tool that we all have access to. It's free, but we forget to do it. And we forget the power of it, I think.
For sure. And, you know, our brain needs oxygen to work properly. So what I find is when you take, I always say, take five really deep breaths. I like to say it's the, you know, the kind of breath that you feel like you've gained weight when you breathe in, and you feel like you get skinnier when you breathe out, you know, like really deep breaths. Mm. And it really gives your brain the oxygen to think better than it would have if you just held your breath and stopped. Mm. It really helps you process things in a more healthy way.
Yeah, I totally agree. What are some other ideas that you like to share around resilience that help people move through it consciously, move through it, period?
Well, some of my tools are kind of bigger things. So what I find, in order to be completely, not completely resilient, but the most resilient you can be, it's really important to set boundaries with yourself and with other people in your lives, because it's hard to go through hard things when you have other people bringing you down. And I grew up in a very toxic family. And I've had to make the choice to not have some family members in my life because they just weren't helping me get through things. They were bringing me down. They were, I've had people, when I talked on the phone to certain family members, if there were other people in the room with me, they would know who I was talking to because they could see my facial expression fall. So it's things like that, that you really have to set hard boundaries to say, you know what, I can't have this in my life anymore. And that is very hard, but it's essential to being your best self and to getting through hard things. Because if someone's making the things harder, then it's very difficult to get through them. And
do you have advice on helping people set boundaries? Because that, you're right, it is difficult. Is it just like a cold turkey thing? Or do you have the conversation with the person like this? I got to step back from this. Or
it depends on the situation. There are some people who are totally receptive to you saying, look, this needs to change, or I need this from you. But then there are other people, like the members of my family, who don't, like, they're narcissistic is, I guess, the best term. You know, they don't think they are doing anything wrong. It's all my fault. So those types of people are not receptive to you saying, could you please not do this? Could you please not speak to me like this? Could you please not interfere with this situation? So for those situations, you do have to sometimes just cold turkey it and say, look, I can't have you in my life anymore. It's not that I don't love you. It's that I can't have this anymore, because you can love people from a distance. And sometimes that's the healthier way to do it. So that is, you know, it's so dependent on the person that you're dealing with. Like I said, some of them are to a point where they will say, wow, maybe I could, you know, be a little different.
Wouldn't that be great when people can actually accept that, okay, maybe I am showing up in a certain way and it would be more helpful if I changed how I spoke or if I changed how I interacted. Yeah. You know, that takes a very conscious person to recognize that.
For sure. And not all of us are at that stage of our evolvement. So
yes.
And no.
No, we're not.
No. And in a personal way, we have to accept the fact that we are all perfectly imperfect. So the media and social media are horrible for presenting everyone's highlight reel, everyone's perfect life, everyone looks perfect, the perfect makeup, the perfect body. Those standards are set by somebody else and they're not real. And it's something that I've tried to teach my kids from a very young age that, you know, all these things that are thrown at us are not real life. And you need to just understand that everybody is perfectly imperfect. That gorgeous woman that's on Instagram might be miserable behind the scenes. You don't know. You're only seeing what people want you to be. So accept that we're all perfectly imperfect. Accept that you are who you are. We're all different. That's what makes the world such a wonderful place. And you don't have to be like anybody else. You have to own who you are with all of your imperfections, with, you know, the extra weight, your lips aren't poofy enough, your eyes aren't big enough, whatever. I mean, there's so many things that get thrown at us now about how we're supposed to look, act, be, and we forget who we really are. And I think that's so important, to just remember who you are and be that person and love that person.
Yeah, such an important message. Difficult to do sometimes, but it's all a process.
It is. And, you know, I think that if we're not growing as a person every day, then what are we doing? I try to become a little better every day. And, you know, I wish more people could think that way and not just stay who they were when they were 15, you know, and, you know, just try to be a little bit better every day. And, you know, not only does it help the rest of the world, but it really helps you, you know, to just go, wow, like, I didn't think I could do that. And look at me today. Or I didn't like myself much yesterday, but I like myself a little better today. You know, little things like that, if you keep adding them up, make a huge difference.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we don't have to. It's like, how do you eat an elephant? It's like one bite at a time,
exactly.
Right? It's, you know, and small steps matter. And
for
they
sure.
accumulate and compound.
And one thing I like to teach people, and I'm guilty of not keeping it up. I started it, and then when COVID happened, I kind of stopped it. But it's really interesting to write down. I used to keep a diary all the time, but I had a coach tell me one time to keep a success journal. So every time you do something that's kind of cool or that, you know, lights you up, to write it down. And then on a day when you're having a rough day or, you know, beating yourself up, look back at that book and go, oh, wow. Like, look at those things that I did. And I find that really helpful.
'Cause we forget.
We do. And I looked back, like I said, I started one of those a year and a half ago, and then, or almost 2 years ago, I guess it would have been. And then I didn't keep it up. And then I looked back at the things that I had written in it, and I was like, wow, I forgot that happened. And it's a great reminder of how far we've come and of the good things that do happen in our lives. When, you know, when the bad things come, it's good to look back and go, okay, maybe, you know, it's not so bad.
Yeah. It's true. And I think, yeah, to your point, it is when we keep this log of victories that we've had, they don't have to be all gigantic things. It might be that I had a great mindset today, or I had a great conversation with a friend. You know, we tend to invalidate and discount the goodness that shows up continuously. And that's one of the ways that you begin to shift your perspective, is focusing on what's working, what's good, because our little inner critic, boy, that can just go right off into the gutter and take us down darker paths than we want to go.
And maybe it's, I made someone smile today. Like, maybe I complimented someone's hair or their smile or their purse, whatever. You know, maybe I made someone happy today. Maybe somebody complimented me today. You know, little things like that.
Yeah.
One of the things I wrote, because like I said, I grew up in a really dysfunctional family, and I never felt like my parents were proud of me. And one day I was at, you know, our little local craft fair, and a woman who has known me since I was a little girl was talking to me, and she said, "Karen, I'm so proud of you." And it brought tears to my eyes, because, you know, I haven't heard that very often in my life, and especially not from the people who were supposed to love me. And I wrote that down, that, you know, Paulette said she was proud of me. And that has kept me going on a lot of days.
And there you go, right? That just the smallest comment, and look how much fuel it gives you.
For sure.
And that's the importance of reminding ourselves of these little things that happen to us in our life, these little comments that are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuel.
Yes, definitely.
One of the, one of the things that you've done, and I realize I made a mistake in the title. I called it Unbreakable, but that's in my head what it is and what you are, I think, you got together very quickly after the mass shooting in Nova Scotia, and you were able to get 22 stories together from various women telling their own stories. And you were prompted to do this because you had a friend lose her life to the mass shooting. And your book is called We Are Unbreakable: Raw, Real Stories of Resilience. Mm-hmm. And can you talk to that a little bit? Because I'm sure it's weaving into what we're talking about. It's all about resilience. You know, how did that really come about? Why did you want to do it? How did you moved through it very quickly? You got together and launched and published and became a fundraiser.
I did this book in 41 days from the day that I got the idea until the day I published it. I don't recommend that, but I actually woke up one morning with my friend Gina's voice in my head, and Gina was the final victim of that mass shooting. And Gina was this fierce woman who also was a single parent. She was a 2-time cancer survivor, and she was the type of person that didn't let anything slow her down. And she just, whatever she wanted to do, she did it. She was bass fishing one minute, she was riding her horse the next minute, she was salsa dancing on the Halifax waterfront the next minute. I mean, she was just this amazing woman. And I heard her voice in my head kind of telling me to do this book. And she knew, and I knew, that I always wanted to be an author. And I say it was her pushing me from above to make it happen. And at that time, my son was going through chemotherapy. So I thought pulling together a book that's all my story was a little too much at that time. So I called or texted or emailed as many women as I could think of that I had met either at events. Some of them I actually know as friends. Some of them I've just met in passing. A couple of them I've never met, but were referred to me by other women. And said, could you please write me your story of 2020? And I'd like it by next week. And 21
no pressure.
Came back with their stories about the year of 2020. And then I added my own chapter to make 22. And because as I said, for me, helping is healing. So I partnered with an organization called the Nova Scotia Remembers Legacy Society to set up an education fund for women from rural Nova Scotia. I do need to change the page in the book because that society kind of isn't anymore, as far as I understand, and they've divvied the funds up to other organizations. So I will still be doing an education fund for women in rural Nova Scotia, but it may look a little different. So that's what I did. I gathered all these stories of resilience of this unprecedented year of 2020 that affected so many of us in so many different ways. And I tried to get as many different perspectives from women as I could. A couple of them are farm women. I have an Indigenous woman. I have two immigrant women from Nigeria. I have, you know, the executive director of long-term care from Northwood, which was a long-term care facility who had our first COVID outbreak in a facility in Nova Scotia.
Right.
And like I said, there's 22 stories. So there's a lot to cover, but a lot of one woman in particular, Lisa Drader Murphy, is a fashion designer here in Nova Scotia. And she brought up how COVID and, you know, all of the uncertainty triggered some things from her past that she then had to kind of deal with all over again. And so there's so many really cool stories about how these women interpreted 2020 and a pandemic and then a mass shooting. And then I have a commander from the Navy who got many stories from other women in the military. A couple of them were on HMCS Fredericton when the helicopter crashed off of Greece, which also unfortunately lost the lives of some Nova Scotians. And, you know, just to read how they all got through this year, or last year, is really interesting in that they're all very different people, but they all kind of had the same theme at the end that, you know, this year's crazy, but we're going to be okay. And that's what I really love about the book is each woman wrote their own story. So it's in their voice and they're just so touching to read. One woman, Margaret Miller, was the first one to get her story back to me. And I've been single for 10 years and she's, you know, been married for 50. I don't think it's 50 yet, but a lot of years. And she talked about how their roles changed in 2020 because he had health issues and she had to become the strong one. And he became the one that she had to look after when it had always been the other way around. And it was just so touching. Hers is all about togetherness with her husband. So, you know, everybody dealt with it so differently, but at the same time, in a similar way.
And you were prompted to do this so quickly. Why? You were going to use it as a fundraiser to help the victims.
I had already done a fundraiser to help the victims through my clothing company. So I had done a Nova Scotia Strong.
And what's that called? Is that still in existence?
It is. It's the website is strongerns.com. So it's a clothing company that I've had since 2010. And it used to be t-shirts and hoodies promoting agriculture and rural living because I was a farmer. And when the shooting happened, I pivoted just a couple of days later and thought, I need to do something to help these families. I just can't even imagine what these families are going through. And I just got my graphic designer on board and we designed a Nova Scotia Strong graphic, put it on t-shirts and hoodies, and I donated 100% of my profits for 3 months to the fund for the families that was set up with the Red Cross in the province of Nova Scotia. And I actually made more money than I've ever made ever in my life. The sales were phenomenal. And I was able in 3 months to donate $96,000 to that fund for the families through this clothing line. And I guess that's I didn't incredible. Think that was enough. So then I did the book.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. That's an incredible give back. And I'm curious, how did helping the families, creating, you know, getting this book together, how did it help you?
I was so upset when I found out that Gina was gone. It wasn't fair. She has one daughter. And then I kept thinking about all of the other families. And, you know, these are good people who were just minding their own business. Nobody did anything to deserve this. And these families, you know, just got, they're being drugged through the most public thing you can imagine and trying to grieve through it. And I just thought, I need to help. And I didn't know how else to do it. I had this clothing company and I thought, you know, that's easy. I know how to do this. So I will just sell shirts and give them the money. And it was a great distraction for me. And it was a great way to heal, knowing that I was doing some little thing. And $96,000 spread out over 22 families isn't very much. And they're going to need, you know, help for a long time. You know, this grief process is going to be lifelong for them. But I just, it helped me heal to know I was helping other people. And that's kind of how I've always tried to live my life. Most of the time, the people I'm helping are my own kids. But this was a far bigger scale. And, you know, I wanted them to know somebody cared. And it wasn't just me. It was all these people who were buying shirts. I shipped them all over the world. You know, all of these people cared. And all of these people wanted to help. And that's what I wanted those families to know.
That's incredible. And I think there seems to be a theme emerging, your words, helping is healing. And like, that's incredible that you've have been able to donate all of that. And I'm sure you can't even, you don't even recognize the ripple effect that it's actually had. You know, you're just at the forefront of doing it, but not recognizing probably the deep impact.
No. And, you know, I haven't personally talked to most of the families. I do know a few of the families. And, you know, they thanked me, but I didn't do it for any reward or, you know, for anybody to say thank you, because it helped me. It helped me take my mind off of what it was. And, you know, that whole shooting event triggered so many people in so many different ways. Anyone who's ever survived domestic violence was triggered by that, because it kind of started as a domestic violence situation. And, you know, for me, in a selfish kind of way, like, I just had to do it to take my mind off of all that stuff and do something that I knew was a good thing, instead of sitting on my couch and crying, which is what I did for the first 2 days after the shooting. I just thought, you know what, I need to channel this energy into something better. And that's what I did.
I'm curious if you see what you've been through, what you continue to go through as you just moving through life. Do you see your journey as a spiritual one?
Definitely. And as time goes on, I get more and more spiritual. And I notice more little things that have meaning to me. And my kids laugh at me a lot. And, you know, some of my friends are like, you find meaning in everything. And I'm like, but there is meaning in everything. You know, eagles flying over. I live on a river. I see eagles often, and they, you know, to me, that's a message. You know, finding dimes is a message. I just, you know, I'm very connected to the energy outside of myself. And I think that's developed over the years. And I can remember, you know, my grandmother was very religious and spiritual, and I kind of thought it was hokey back in the day. But now I'm like, wow, she knew. Like, I really can feel a lot of the things that she believed coming into my life. And it's this really cool experience when you get to that point of life where you realize that it's so much bigger than you.
And do you think that what you've been through has helped you or put you on a path of life purpose? Do you think about that?
I do a lot.
Are you living your life purpose?
I often say that the universe, God, whoever you believe in, put me here to help others. And the reason that I've had to deal with all the things I've had to deal with is to somehow help other people deal with them. And that's my mission now, is to share my stories and to help others get through those hard times, because so often we feel so alone. And that's actually part of the reason I did the book, was COVID made us all feel so isolated and alone. And I wanted people to know that you're not alone, that other people are feeling the same things as you're feeling. And we're all in this together. And the book seemed like an easy way to get that message out. But that's, you know, kind of how I want to help people, is to know they're not alone, and to know that no matter how hard today is or the situation that they're going through is, there's someone who has felt those feelings and can maybe help them get through it in an easier way. And that's my mission.
Yeah, a great mission, and something to so powerful to live that day in, day out in everything that you do. And I'm sure you'll continue to help many, many women. If there is one encouraging idea that you want women to hear, boil it down. And I know there's a lot of amazing points to boil it down, but if there's something that rises up, you know, what is that one message you want women to hear about resilience?
The one thing that I want women not only to hear, but to do, it's a tool that a woman who's now a friend of mine, but was an acquaintance 9 years ago, I think it was, she's a life coach, and she gave me this tool, and it has changed my life. And I hope that it can change someone else's life. So she gave me a postcard and told me to put it in my bathroom and read the words out loud to myself every single day. And it took me 2 years to be able to do this, because I couldn't say the words and feel like I meant them. But the words are, I deeply and completely love myself. And I think the majority of women have a very hard time saying those words. And I think loving yourself is the key to getting through whatever life throws at you. Because it all has to start there. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it took me 2 years before I could look at myself in the mirror and say those words without crying or looking away, or sometimes I just couldn't even make them come out of my mouth. And since I've been able to say those words and believe those words and feel that feeling, my life has changed exponentially. The deeper part that I wanted to add on is, when you talk to yourself, don't talk to yourself like who you are today. Talk to yourself like you are 5-year-old you. Would you say the things to 5-year-old you that you say to 40-year-old you or 30-year-old you or whatever your age is? I doubt it, because so many of us look at ourselves and go, oh, you're ugly, or oh, that, you know, you're a failure, whatever it is. We would not say that to a 5-year-old little girl. And I think that's so important, is to, you know, the person you talk to most in your life is yourself. So make sure the things that you're saying to yourself are healthy and positive and, you know, going to build yourself up, not knock yourself down.
So true. And that was what I was going to ask, was really, how do you think that loving yourself really, you know, actually help create and change everything? But I think you've just answered it, right? It's just that self-care and self-compassion. We would never speak to, hopefully not, a 5-year-old the way we would speak to ourselves, our 5-year-old self, or another person's 5-year-old. You know, right. It's easier to detach ourselves from it, to think, would we go over to a small child and call them a failure? And why would we do that to ourselves? So that's a very good point, Karen, about loving yourself, because I agree. It does start there. It does start there.
And there's another kind of angle. So many of us have what they call the mother wound, where, you know, our mothers didn't treat us the way we wanted to be treated. And I've seen it written that, you know, talk to yourself like the mother you wanted, not the mother you had. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting way to look at it too, because So many of us do have that mother wound, they call it. And it's important not to hear that voice in your head anymore.
Yeah, to minimize that, turn the volume down and turn up the one that you need to hear.
Yes.
Yeah, years ago, and not that I've watched Dr. Phil recent years, but I remember years ago when he was on Oprah, and he said that, you know, basically be the parent you never had, you
yes.
know, basically become that, you know, stop hoping for something to be different with those people, that, you know, become the parent you need to be for yourself. And I think, yeah, it is all about what is the script or narrative that you're telling yourself in your head. And I don't think we can discount the power of that.
No, like I said, you talk to yourself more than you talk to anybody else on the planet. So you need to make sure that you are talking to yourself in a positive way.
Yeah.
Because you hear your own voice.
Well, you certainly have accomplished a lot.
Well, thank you.
It's so true. And those are all powerful messages. And despite all of the events in your life that you've been through, and past and recent, you know, you've been recognized by RBC Canadian Women Entrepreneur Awards as a nominee in 2014 and in 2021. You've been a mentor to women in business. You've been mentored by Arlene Dickinson of Dragon's Den. You've done a lot of volunteering. You've done a lot of good in this world. And if people want to connect with you or to buy your book, We Are Unbreakable, or buy your t-shirts, what's the best way for people to go about locating you? I'll put all the information in the show notes, but KarenDeanSpeaks.com, is that the best way to get in touch with who you are and all the links to everything else that you're going on?
KarenDeanSpeaks.com will get you to the a link to the book website, which has its own website, which is weareunbreakable.ca. And then the clothing company is totally separate. So like I said earlier, it's StrongerNS, as in Nova Scotia.com. And I added a couple of designs after my son was diagnosed with cancer. One of them says, "Not today, cancer, not today." And the other one is, it says fighter and has a maple leaf on it, to represent Canada. And, now that, I've ended the fundraiser for the families, I don't give away 100% of my profits anymore, but I do give a portion of every shirt sold to organizations that, help cancer victims or do cancer research. So I'm still giving back, just not in as big of a way, because I do need to feed my kids and, you know, pay my bills. So StrongerNS.com is the clothing company, and KarenDeanSpeaks.com is, you know, my speaking, and will link you to my book. And on social media, you can find me just at Karen Dean Speaks on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I don't use Twitter very much, though. And Countryfied Clothing is the technical name of my company, so it's also on social media. Countryfied, it's country, then F-I-E-D, is my clothing company.
Well, you're an amazing woman. You've done amazing things with your life, and I'm sure you'll continue to grow and learn and share with other people. And if there's one word that I've heard today, a few ideas. One is, you know, helping is healing, but I've heard the word pivot, and you're certainly a woman knows how to pivot to make things happen. So I thank you for sharing your insight on resilience. And it's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having
me. Karen.
I'm so glad you reached out to me.
That was such a great conversation. If you loved it too, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Please go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. And if you want to continue the conversation, connect with Soul Sister Conversations on the Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dana Lloyd Leadership, on Twitter at Coach Dana_Lloyd, and of course on LinkedIn. See you next week.